Hi, you're listening to Go See a Show, the Off-Off-Broadway podcast. It's October, which in my mind means it's time for pumpkin beer, candy corn, and horror tales. And of course, being a theater podcast producer, Radio Theater's 6th annual H.P. Lovecraft Festival fills that need for scary stories perfectly for me. You might remember hearing the company's mastermind, Dan Bianchi, on the podcast back in May of 2012 during a previous Lovecraft Festival. That's him you'll hear first in the interview. And this time, he's back with the cast from the festival's opening night. Joshua Nicholson, Frank Zeligny, and Patrick Alberti. Take a listen.
Yeah, believe me, if you're not, you know, and if you are a Lovecraft fanatic, we throw in all of the recognizable, you know, sayings and the words and Arkham and Miskatonic University and this, all of those things.
Tonight's, Shadow Over Innsmouth is one of my favorite stories, and it was highly recognizable.
Yeah, well, good, that's good. What I say to you, and I always try to be in the audience of, like, if people who have no clue, some people... When I'm out by the box office, and they actually come up there and they go, "I'm here to see a show," and you know the girl will be going, "Yeah, what?" You know, and because we had other shows in the building, I don't know, and he has to look it up on his cell phone. Oh yes, this thing Lovecraft, you know, whatever. And I go, "What? I don't understand. Are you here?" Because if you're lost coming to the box office, where do you get inside? You start hearing.
I was so concerned that people are going to think that it's like a romantic comedy or something.
Oh, yeah. Lovecraft. Oh, this is nice.
I love trying to describe. Yeah, there was. Yeah.
Yes, we've had that in the past. I mean, you know, all of that sort of thing. But you know, as I said, you have the fanatics who, maybe, you know, if you know this story here, Innsmouth, Marcus. There was no Marcus. It was not written in a, you know, first person. It was not written or anything like that. I had to take it and adapt these to make it palatable somehow, you know, on the live theater stage to get it out there to people who maybe have never heard of anything. But then, as we say, like tomorrow night, the Dunwich Horror has all the Miskatonic University and the Necronomicon and the Cthulhu's and all of that. Again, I don't, you know, some people, we used to do them here, and you'd have a whole first two rows of people, "Hey, you mentioned it," you know, "Oh, I know what it is.
He said the thing. He said the thing."
A little byword, a few words there, whatever. So we try to keep those too. And yes, these are stories that are not, you know, I don't know if you could find any redeeming value in them, that at the end everyone winds up and it's a happy story and so forth. Usually not. Somebody winds up screaming, usually him.
And, is that the purpose of horror, though? I don't think so. I mean,
well, I know, yes, but that's what, you know, doing it in a theater world. It's been, you know, like pulling teeth, even getting audiences. And it, we played at down the block, two blocks away, at the Lovecraft Bar, the new Lovecraft Bar on Avenue B.
You're gonna love this place.
What?
Oh yes, yeah, all done up. Yeah. They put money in all the murals, everything else, hand painted, beautiful stuff.
That sounds amazing.
So they had Lovecraft's birthday in August, and they're not officially open, so it was a soft opening. They said, "You want to come down?" And so they have a little stage down, and there's a restaurant upstairs, a bar downstairs, and another big room to play in there and so forth. And man, we had the place jam-packed with people who were the Lovecraft fans or horror or whatever. And they would cheer and they laugh at all of the words you say and everything else along the way. And you know, so they said, "You want to come back and be here for twice a month, do a different show?" And I'm great, okay, because they got a good sound system. We don't have to do anything, none of this lights and everything else. They walk in, boom, it's there. It's more intimate, maybe 45 to 50 seats or something that they'll put in there and stuff for us at a bar. But everyone was rapt attention, you know, and they were listening and could tell what they were doing. So I said, that's our audience. Those might not be the people we're trying to get in here every month, because the traditional theater audience goes, "Lovecraft, who's he?" And you got to explain and you got to teach. And so he does the intros.
Yeah, the intros, yeah. You know, it's a quick intro, but yeah it's something. The story's sort of, I think the stories stand alone. I mean, even if you don't know Lovecraft, you hear this Cthulhu, it's like, I don't
Lovecraft.
Know.
Like, I had never read a word of Lovecraft before I started doing this festival, and it's cool stuff. I'm not usually a horror guy, But I really like the way that these stories are told, and it's just cool. It's just cool.
So I skipped my usual intro, which is like getting everybody's voice on the mic, but blah blah blah. But regular listeners will recognize Dan Bianchi as the first voice that you heard, of course. But we'll start with Dan just to reintroduce yourself on mic and what you did here on this show.
Well, except for getting on the stage, and Wes has been a sound man for many many years, and he's on the stage with the guys, so I have to adapt the stories, and we come in, I make all the music and the sound effects and all of that sort of thing. It's audio theater now, you know. There are people across the nation who want to keep this format, you know, as a true format, you know, unto itself. So they got away from the old-time radio show stuff that's got a little hokey, you know, from the 1930s and 40s. And now the groups are audio groups. So that's what we kind of look at as a 21st century technological, you know, artistic form, and not just a throwback to the old days. We want it to be something new. So I hope they hear the music and that adds to it and all of that too, because that's something you don't ordinarily hear in a dramatic form. And at live, at least, you know, you could do whatever you want in a music studio, but here we are syncing it all up. The guys, you know, practice all their cues, and Wes on the music there has got to know when to come in and out and do all of that sort of thing. So there's a lot of like that kind of stuff that goes into it that the ordinary traditional play doesn't have in rehearsals and so forth. But I got a group around me now that, like in the days of old with the old-time radio shows, they were people that you give a script at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and 7 o'clock they go on live. Not 7 weeks of rehearsal every day, and who am I, and what do I do, you know. It, you know, they could come up with the various voices, they know how to, the meter, how to do. So it's more like a band, I always say. This is a band with microphones, and it's electrical, and we do stuff like that. And it's kind of like doing sets in a band. You know, tonight you do the moonbar. Oh, you're not in? Okay, he'll do the moonbar with him.
You're the detective. You're the guy that goes crazy.
You know, so it's that kind of theater as well. And it's a performance group.
And we've got that cohort surrounded. Last time we had radio theater on the mic was also for the H.P. Lovecraft Festival, but 2.5 years ago. But at, like, very appropriately, you guys are restaging this in October. And Can I have you guys introduce yourselves?
Sure. I'm Joshua Nicholson. I've been doing radio theater shows for almost 2 years now.
I'm Frank Zeleny. I've been doing radio theater for about 100,000 years now. Something like that. I don't know.
100,000 years. I'm Patrick Alberti. I've been doing radio theater for just about as long as Frank. So,
yep. So this is really... I love that you described this, Dan, as a band, because that was exactly what... Frank, right? Yeah, that's exactly what Frank was saying before you came in the room, that you just had this sense of how to almost like score these guys like an orchestra. So do you find yourselves therefore switching instruments at all? And how do you practice your instruments? Are you playing scales on your voice? Like, what is that like for an radio theater actor?
Well, you're definitely playing around. Like you say scales, I would say tessitura. You're playing with all the highs and the lows of your voice, and you use those to your advantage for coloring different characters. Because, like I was discussing before with you before we went on mic, we want to make sure that a new audience member who's introduced to this kind of theater is going to not have a hard time figuring out, okay, which character's talking now? Well, if it sounds like that, I know that it must be Edith, you know? But if the guy is sitting over here and suddenly gets very dramatic, you know that he's a different character. So you've got playing around with intensity of the voice, playing around with where you're sitting in the range of your voice.
Sometimes accents. Like, it's in order to... sometimes you have very similar characters that you might play, but in order to get a get a different voice, you toss an appropriate accent that might be found in that story for that character, just to get a nice difference and to make it more interesting. And oh, there's more characters, more and more characters. Like in this show, I get to stretch a little bit. In Dunwich Tomorrow, I use both the very top and the very bottom of my range with like two separate characters. So that, I mean, it is a workout, that one is, because I am at the broad ends of the spectrum.
And just for the record, his ground under the sea freaks me out.
That's really, was there effect on that?
Just echo.
Yeah.
That's it.
But besides that, it was all me.
It is pretty freaky. You got to hear this live because it's pretty intense over mic. But what about, you mentioned that, you're not here. Do you guys switch roles? Does that happen?
You know, what's also nice about it, going back to the band thing, is that, I've been working with Frank for a long time, and while Josh was new, he's come right into it, and we really can, I know what Joshua does, I know what Frank does, they know what I do, and we get this really nice, comfortable rhythm where it's like, I know how he's breathing, I know when he's going to stop, and now it's my time for me to come in, and stuff like that. And when we get into Innsmouth, there are those long stretches where it's just like pop, ba da ba da ba da, and we have to go back and forth between one another. And that's where that sort of comfortable feeling comes in, is you really know and you can switch off, and it's nice, it's fun.
Another thing that I'm thinking about in terms of radio theater that I don't think we talked about last time we had you on, Dan, is the relationship to the audience. With a traditional radio theater, in the old days, of course, you were doing this on a soundstage, you had all your Foley lined up, and it was all mics, and you had the paper in front of you, and the audience was receiving it through the transmitter, sitting in, family gathered around the radio. Here, you're almost mimicking that style, but with a live audience. And I know the audience, and being an audience member, I feel very engaged, but I'm curious what that means for you guys on stage. As actors, this is a very different experience. You're not, holding up Yorick's skull. You're just using your voice. So what is that feedback loop like for you as voice actors performing this live?
There is no fourth wall in this kind of theater. We don't have that separation between us and audience, because you as the audience member are my other actor. Whoever we're playing against or whoever we're talking to, guess what? That's your role.
That's true. You guys never look at each other, or very rarely look at each other.
No. Exactly. I mean, because we've all had our hand at directing these things too, and the first thing that we say to a newbie is, okay, don't look at the person you're playing to. That's the hardest thing in the world, because that's where you get a lot of your physical, cues. But, in rehearsal, we look at each other, fine, got that out of the way. Now, the audience member is the other guy at all times and in all places, and that causes, because you've got three or four different kinds of audience members in this kind of theater. You've got your auditory. They sit there, they pull down the curtains, and they just listen and paint pictures in their head, and they have a great time. But you got other people who are really into the sensory thing, the feel of it. These speakers, when they're kind of surrounding you with that wash of sound, be it orchestral or sound effects or voice or a combination thereof, they're getting that feel thing going for them. And then, let me see, I've got feel, I've got auditory, and then you've got the people who are still looking for a show on the stage, and you got to give it to them. You can't bore them either. So whatever kind of audience member you got to feed them. So that's why we try to play it to them and make them the other player in the show. Oh my God, I'm part of the show. This is cool.
I guess you might be able to liken it to actors who work on green screen stuff, because sometimes the other person that they're talking to isn't there at all. It might be a giant alien, and you might just have some stagehand just saying a line, and then they're responding to a random tennis ball, imagining all these things. So with this, it's the same kind of thing. I find myself whenever I'm I've got dialogue scenes with multiple people, I will try and affix a point for each character, so that whenever that person is talking, I'm looking in the direction of where I've put that character, and then the other person talks, look over a little bit this way, then look over a little bit this way, all in the audience still, but it's just to sort of give that feel that for those who need visual, because I mean we're not just doing it like deadpan face. It's like regular acting. You do put all of your face and body sometimes into it. although sometimes, I mean, you're not jumping around necessarily.
We just had a chuckle because we did a show up in Midtown where this guy over here that you were just listening to, Josh, had this bit where he had this kind of tough, hard-boiled detective, and he gets
like
really
the
worked
that
up.
You heard tonight, yeah.
Tell him about the dance.
Well, whenever he would get super angry, like he couldn't stand still. He'd have to just get out of it. I need to move it around. I need to put a whole body into it because that's what I have to do to get the right voice out. So that's what you have to do. Yeah, it's. I guess for the listening audience, imagine George Costanza when he's angry.
That's a pretty good description. Apt description. So I'm actually going to, like, this is a great conversation. I'm going to kind of bring it to a close now because we're hopefully going to do this a couple more times if you guys are open to it. Absolutely. Because I'm just really selfish and love Lovecraft and love what you guys do. So I'm coming to a couple more shows see all the different stories. So we'll be back. This is almost like, this will be the first, you guys are the first suite of podcasts ever on Go See a Show. Almost 130 episodes in, and you're the first, like,
well,
you're going to be a trio.
You mentioned about podcasts there, what I mentioned earlier about the Lovecraft bar going over there. We're now aligned with the famous magazine Weird Tales.
No way.
Yes, yep. They came awesome. In on it, and they want to be like sponsor, let's say. We'll be doing live at the Lovecraft Radio Theater, Weird Tales. And
links will be in the show notes.
Oh, well. And so that's, and we were practicing tonight, but it didn't work in this environment. And we'll be streaming live around the world from the Lovecraft. Doing
that's awesome.
And not just Lovecraft stories. We have all our other things. We did Sundays with Poe for a year. Had 20 of his stories. People would come. And all other ghost stories and horror stories. So plenty of material. But that's what we're looking forward to, and that starts the second week of October, and it'll be two Wednesdays every month with a different show every month. So looking forward to that, and that's our new venture.
Always the producer.
Hey man, you gotta
do it. Yeah.
It's always going. Yeah.
Thanks. I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait to see that stuff too. So, I'll have you guys back next. I think next week is when I'm back. So.
Cool.
Oh, yes.
Fantastic.
Oh, yes. Okay. Very good.
Thank you, Dan, Joshua, Frank, and Patrick for joining me on the mic, and I hope to talk with you all again soon because Go See a Show is going to try to see and hear all of the pieces in this year's H.P. Lovecraft Festival at The Crane, 85 East 4th Street in Manhattan. The festival continues on Thursday, October 9th, 2014, and plays nightly until Sunday, October 12th. All shows at 7:30 p.m. Head to radiotheaternyc.com, and that's theater with an R-E, for a link to tickets and info on what stories are playing when. Thanks to you for listening into the podcast. If you dig it, please give it a like on Facebook, facebook.com/GoSeeAShow. Follow at GoSeeAShow on Twitter and rate or comment on the show's iTunes page. Until next time, go see a show.
Thanks, dude.
Thank you.
Thank you. Right. Awesome.